One band that I'm really worried about the career of is Dixie's Midnight Runners. So I do this brilliant impersonation of Kevin Rowlands. It's completely ludicrous and useless unless they're in the charts. Come on, Eileen! Oh, that's where Jimmy! Plan B! Jimmy!
Yes, as well as the big freeze and the steel strike, January 1980 brought us Dixie's Midnight Runners. They came from Birmingham, they dressed like dockers, they lived like saints. Well, most of the time.
Kevin was always the one, look, we can't smoke dope, we like hippies. And we used to be sneaking around smoking dope, and it was like...
I was a dad.
Further evidence of Kevin's overbearing vision came in their couture.
Dixie's always had this thing that they were like a band let loose in the dressing up box on Playaway. And they only got it ever right once.
I remember introducing them on a Top of the Pops 1,000 years ago in the 80s. And they all kind of looked like commandos with little black woolly hats on, as if they were going to storm the place.
But Kevin told me that he got the idea of the woolly hats from me, because I used to wear a woolly hat.
He wanted to look good and look different.
Because we used to rehearse in squats in places like disused warehouses, which were always freezing, even in summer. And I used to wear a woolly hat.
Well, we just used to go to a shop where they sold hats, you know, just cut the tops off.
They didn't like the bubbles at all, just didn't suit them.
And just sew the top so it wouldn't unravel. Do you know what I mean?
Come with me just a bit, and I will introduce you to some people from Birmingham by the name of Dixie's Midnight Runners.
It was very frightening to be, to have to do Top of the Pops and things like that.
I remember the first time we'd done Top of the Pops, we did it, and I think it was January 80, with Dance Dance, and, you know, I remember, like, the intro of the song, I was doing my little dance to it, you know, and then I started singing, you know, and I started singing, I thought, this is going okay, first verse in, it was miming, but it's like singing the words, and then I thought, there's 10 million people looking at me. As I was singing, there's 10 million people looking at me, and I just started to crack up. And my jaws looked stiff. And I thought I could see my face as so I look back on that performance, and getting more and more serious.
Shut your mouth, do you know the truth?
People used to think I was really angry. Mostly I was just terrified.
Yeah.
And from fear to sheer horror.
Dixie's Midnight Runners!
Well, I wrote the words, Kevin wrote the music, and it was about, you know, an experience I'd had, you know, seeing Gino Washington for the first time about 10 years earlier when I was a kid.
Michael, the lover Lord, before him there was no other. In his time there may have been many, now he's gone, there won't be any.
You know, it's just somebody saying thank you for a great night, basically.
He was a cult figure, wasn't he?
He was a cult figure.
Yeah.
I don't know why they chose me, but I read something. They said that he was influenced by watching me and the Ram Jam Band. I mean, we was hot.
Sent me over a copy of the record and everything, and I couldn't believe it, you know. I thought it was just a little mention. And then the whole thing is, most of it was about me, you know, Gino. So I was just laughing, you know. It caught me as a joke, you know, because I'd been in England so long, I hadn't got back into that American vein thing. Oh, about me? Oh, man, I'm cooking, you know what I mean?
The record was cooking too. Soon Gino was Top of the Pops.
I missed it. Gino being number one. It bypassed me completely. I didn't take it in at all. Wasn't present. Wasn't able to be present and savour it and enjoy it, which is a shame, really.
I grew to hated it in a way.
Mm.
And I think a lot of the group did as well, you know, yeah. because it's kind of our Gino again. And because when people were coming to see us live, they expected just to hear Gino.
It became bigger than the group.
So the group was big, but the hits were bigger. And the boys decided the rewards weren't big enough.
We just realised that we probably weren't getting the deal that we deserved. So when we finished recording the LP, we just decided to pinch the master tapes and hold them to ransom, which we did. We set up diversions and somebody ready to, the getaway van and all that. And it was like something, an SAS couldn't have done it better. The police were involved and they chased us up the A40 to burn them, and we were like, trying to find somewhere to hide the tapes. And
my parents' house, that's where we had them.
Yeah,
to look after these people.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Eventually, the ransom was paid, the hostage returned, and the captive album released.
It was a moral victory for us. And that was a good thing, it really did work, but it messed things up in other ways.
We were drama queens, really.
Yeah.
We liked a good drama.
By the end of 1980, the drama got too much. Internal tensions and external apathy had made their mark. Partway through a glamorous European tour, things came to a head.
Kevin told me on stage, in the middle of a song, that the band was splitting up. And I just burst into tears in the middle of, I just couldn't take it.
And that was that for 1980. Most of the band left to form a new group, The Bureau, while Jimmy and the Kevin stuck around for Dexys Mark II. A new lineup, a new image, and a new set of songs. Their place in pop history was assured, though occasionally abused. Come on,